Welcome to Gospel Tangent, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. In our next conversation with Steve Mayfield, we'll talk about Mormons in the FBI. Is it true that the FBI likes to hire Mormons? Steve will answer that question in just a minute. We'll also talk about an important spy case where a Mormon FBI agent was arrested for spying for the Russians. That'll be an interesting conversation. I hope you join us. Well, let's talk. I know earlier we were talking a little bit about Mormons in the FBI.
Yes.
And so that is something you can give us some more details on.
Yes.
So,
again, working with the FBI for 4 years, there was a very noticeable thing about the Mormons. And there's been an underlying fable about Mormons in the FBI, some good, some bad. When I started working in San Francisco, we had what they call the 10-day interview, where you're interviewed by one of the big bosses. This gentleman was not LDS, but he was the assistant special in charge, which means he's one of the big bosses. It was interesting because he was one of the agents who worked on the Mississippi murders back in the early 60s of the three civil rights.
Emmett Till?
Yeah, not Emmett Till. It was these three college students who came down and were killed and buried out in the film. Mississippi Burning movie is kind of about that. But he was involved because on his wall he had a picture of him overlooking these bodies they're pulling him out of the ground. Kind of gross, but he asked me, he said, well, I see you served a Mormon mission. And he talked about Mormon agents he knew. My interview was 20 minutes. 5 minutes was about my work and what I thought of the FBI. The other 15 was about Mormonism and my mission. And
oh, really?
Like that. Yeah. So that started off. Well, you got to know, I got to know a lot of the Mormon agents there. In fact, two of the agents were in my LDS ward in Walnut Creek, California. So, but I was told, when they would identify, he's a member of the tribe. What do you mean a member of the tribe? Well, he's LDS, but that's how we identify ourselves.
Oh, really?
He's a member of the tribe. In L.A., they were called the LDS Mafia, in the L.A. office, and that we'll get into that story. But that's how we knew it. Well, one thing I noticed, I just come off my mission, so antagonism, you saw it. We had where the agents sat, what they called the bullpen, and they had a little storage room where they put their files and things. But they had a bulletin board. And every once in a while, there'd be an article about the LDS Church. They'd pin up the board, underline and mark and everything. It would come down and go back up, come down. And there would be snide comments about Mormons, you know, as you go around, not realize I'm LDS. I hear these things, you know. But it was kind of, be forewarned, there's some antagonism. We had a couple of agents in San Francisco that were evangelical Christians, so I had this one run around with this one guy. He kept trying to give me stuff, and I've already got that pamphlet. I don't need to see another one. But then, of course, we had the Pettyhurst case. One of the special agent in charge of the squad that handled bank robberies and kidnappings was LDS. His name was Brian Wheeler. Did I already set this? Or?
No, go ahead.
His name was Brian Wheeler. At the time of the kidnapping, he was a counselor in the bishopric of the San Francisco.
The time of the Pettyhurst kidnapping.
It was 1974.
Okay.
A number of the Mormon agents were involved in investigation, various aspects, but the big one was one of the agents that was credited with the arrest of Pettyhurst, the agent named Jason Moulton, a Utah native, came from Heber Valley, went to BYU, LDS. And in fact, in the CNN documentary back in February, he was the agent they interviewed. So he, you know, an expert on the thing, I would think, you know. He retired about 15 years ago as the assistant special agent in charge of the Seattle office. And he and his wife served a mission in Kentucky about 5 years ago. And I've had some minor contacts with him since then. But one of the things that happened during the Hearst case, when I was assigned to the Berkeley Resident Agency, they brought a number of agents in from other agencies for extra manpower. Came from Sacramento, San Diego, and L.A. One of the agents they brought up from L.A. was a guy named Richard W. Miller. Very interesting character because 10 years later, he was first FBI agent arrested for espionage as a Mormon Russian spy.
It's a Mormon Russian spy.
Mormon, ex-Mormon, because he'd been excommunicated prior to this for an extramarital affair, but that didn't stop people from going after him. Well, I found out very quickly he was LDS because people would ask him, well, we have an agent up in the Eureka office as part of the San Francisco division who's LDS, who was a state president at the same time up there in Eureka. Are you related to him? He says, no, I know who he is. He says, first Richard Miller.
Because, there's two Richard Millers.
Yeah, we got Richard W., which is the agent we're talking about, and Richard G. Miller.
Who's the stake president.
Yeah.
Who's the good guy.
Yeah. Interesting. There's a connection. I get another connection. He says, I know who he is. He's Mormon. I'm a Mormon, too, but I'm not related to him. Well, some of the backbiting and backtalk about him was that they would describe this Richard W. Miller, this future spy, as that fat, dumb, lazy, stupid Mormon agent. You know? And, you know, not really like, hey, I'm LDS too here, but you just kind of ignore it. Well, after about 3 or 4 weeks, they all went back to L.A. And I'm sitting at my desk next to the office of the senior resident agent, the boss of the Berkeley office, named Don Jones. Was not LDS. He was a Presbyterian elder. And he knew I was LDS, but I'm sitting there listening. And he's talking to this other agent about how unprofessional these agents were about this other agent, talking bad, mouthing him and attacking his religion. He says, I'm going to write a letter to the SAC down in L.A., the boss down there, and saying how bad this was. And then he kind of saw me kind of eavesdropping, turned to me and says, does that meet with your approval? Oh, yeah, sure. So, but there's always that underlying Mormon thing there, you know. And again, like I said, it wasn't like every day and you go on fine, but it was, there were just once in a while you'd get these snide comments. I had one agent who I got along with fine until he found out I was Mormon. And after that, he gave me the cold shoulder.
Oh.
You know? So anyway, Richard Miller, 10 years later, ends up being busted. He lasted almost 20 years in the Bureau, but he was just sloppy. As some people say, he should never have been hired. He went to BYU, served a mission, could speak Spanish. But he was overweight all the time. He lost car keys. He was trying to sell things, Amway out of his car, and just always in trouble.
Oh, really?
So I guess he was trying to resurrect his career as best, so he got started communicating unofficially with this female Russian spy. Had an affair with her. They arrested him. Went through 3 trials. But what added on to that problem is that the special agent in charge of the FBI office in L.A. at that time was a guy named Richard Brinsley, LDS. He'd been a bishop, was in a stake presidency. And he had butted heads with, after he came in there, one of the assistant special agents in charge of L.A. was a guy named Bernardo Matt Perez. Matt Perez had been special agent in charge of the San Juan office, but got busted back, sent to L.A. So he got demoted, went there. Well, he and Richard Brinsley butted heads all the time. Well, Matt Perez felt we should fire Richard Miller. He's incompetent. Well, Brinsley said, we're not going to do that. I'm trying to help him. And then comes the spy thing, which kind of turned to black.
So let me make sure. So Brinsley was LDS.
Yes, he is LDS.
Was Matt Perez, is that what you said his name was? He was not LDS.
No.
And so Matt's saying you need to fire this Mormon agent that everybody viewed as incompetent.
Yeah. And Richard Brinks said, well, I don't think he can make a recommendation. I think the final decision comes out of Washington, D.C., whether they do it. And I sense a lot of agents weren't up to par, but the Bureau was very reluctant, I think, to fire people because you spend all that money and time recruiting them and training them, and you kind of hope that they will quit on their own. I saw them do that with not only agents, but with clerks. Because I was supervisor of some clerks, and chief clerk wanted to get rid of people, but let's just give them a stupid job and maybe they'll quit, which would happen. I'm sitting in this corner and I'm just going to leave because I'm not doing anything. But again, that's just my perspective of how they would do things. Well, later on, they had 3 trials on Richard Miller. He eventually went to prison. Richard Brinsley retired, moved to Utah, became head of LDS Church Security for a number of years, was a mission president in Washington, D.C., and now he's just enjoying his retirement. Matt Perez was part of the lead plaintiff in a lawsuit by Latino FBI agents against the FBI for discrimination. And they had racial discrimination and religious discrimination. And in this lawsuit, he kept bringing up the Mormon issue all the time. And when it finally was settled in the federal court in El Paso, Judge Button, I believe that was his name, ruled that, yes, there was racial discrimination against these agents for promotions and whatever. But the religious aspect, I think there's points there, but he kind of backed off. He didn't rule on that issue. This is a big time.
So let me make sure I'm understanding on that. So Matt Perez was complaining about religious discrimination, that the Mormons were protecting Mormons. Is that what
well,
he was saying?
Well, among the many things, Mormons are getting promoted over Latinos.
Mormons were being favored in that case.
Favored. And because of Britt Singh being kind to Richard Miller by not firing him, or things like that. And of course, we bring in all these other agents from other offices who are Latino, and the religious issue came up. In fact, one of the co-plaintiffs in this case was also a Latino agent, was also LDS. So we did have that. But I have a book that he wrote, or somebody wrote for him with his name on it, where he talks about this all the time. It's not only the discrimination on the race issue, but Mormon stuff comes up all the time. So there was apparently some major concern there. And this comes right after black agents had sued the Bureau. So Hoover's FBI...
Or racial discrimination.
Yes. So Hoover's FBI was very white, you know. And it took a long time before they... It wasn't until the early 70s I hired a female agent. Same thing with this. Well, things have overly changed since then. But in the 80s, they had to go through these lawsuits to change things. Matt Perez later... was promoted to assistant, or the special agent in charge of Albuquerque, went back and was a supervisor back in D.C. at the FBI office back there. So I guess he got what he got. But, you know, just the fact that there was this Mormon connection involved in this.
Now, is it true that the FBI likes to recruit Mormons?
I think that's more myth than truth. It stands out because hopefully a young man who... a young woman who goes to work for the FBI has the background. Well, technically, you know, we're supposed to have these morals and characteristics. We don't party, we don't smoke, we don't drink. A lot of them served missions, so they had language skills. And so that was attractive. Now, some of this may go back to a Mormon FBI agent who was killed in the line of duty. Back in the 1930s, we had the gangsters, you know, the Don Dillinger.
Before we do that, I just want to finish up with one more thing. Okay. Yeah. With back to Richard Miller. Yeah. So what was he convicted of?
Passing on information.
What was the information that he passed on?
Just internal material on what the spies, what the Russian spies were doing, and passing on information that he'd acquired as an agent and passing on to this female.
So passing information about Russian agents in the U.S.
And so then and other stuff that they, able to cover that she could use to pass on to her superiors.
Okay. So did he get any agents killed or anything like that?
No.
He wasn't passing on FBI information. It was more of
Russian information. Well, I think it may have been FBI information that he had as an agent passing on, trying to get stuff from her, so he had to kind of tempt her with stuff too.
Was this financial? Was he getting paid?
I can't remember if it was financial or not. It was unauthorized, and that's where he got in trouble.
Okay.
But he was trying to save his career because they have pictures of him meeting with this girl under surveillance. He was been under surveillance by the FBI, so they have pictures of him.
Oh, wow.
You know, and he was doing it unauthorized, and that's what probably got him convicted.
Okay.
So, after he served his time, he moved here to Utah, and I heard a rumor a couple years ago that he'd passed away, but I haven't been able to verify that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he could still be in jail right now?
No, he's out. He's out of prison.
Oh, he's out of prison. He's been released.
Okay. But whether he's still alive or not, I don't know.
Okay.
So
go back. So you're saying something?
Oh, and during the time of the John Dillinger and the Babyface Nelson and all these criminals, a number of agents were brought in to do special things. Of course, the most famous was Melville Purvis. He was the lead guy out of Chicago checking these people. Well, he had a team of other agents, inspectors, with him, including one named Samuel P. Kelly. Now, the name sounds familiar. That's because he was a son of Apostle Matthias Kelly and half-brother to Matthew Kelly. Samuel Kelly served a mission in Hawaii for 4 years, got a law degree in D.C., and became an agent. He was only going to be there a short time, wanted to be a lawyer, but he got involved. Well, he was one of the teams, members of this team. Well, he was involved in the Dillinger case, the Maul Barker and the Barker family thing, but he was killed in the line of duty by Babyface Nelson. Babyface Nelson has three notches in his belt from three agents that he killed during his time before he was killed. Sam McCallie's buried here in the Salt Lake area, and so he was first. Hoover took a liking to him because he was a hard worker, just came and did his job, and was Hoover did not like Milton Purvis because Purvis got a lot of publicity that Hoover didn't get. And eventually, Purvis left, and in, I think, 1960, the same gun he used to kill Babyface Nelsner, or the gun he used to kill John Dillinger, he used on himself, committed suicide. Oh. One of those sad things. Well, we've had three Mormon agents, FBI agents, killed in the line of duty. Sam Kelly was the first, and there was another agent.
And he was killed, so Sammy Kelly was killed by Babyface Nelsner.
Right.
Okay.
Another agent on this team of agents was a guy named Jay Newman, who was also LDS. Jay Newman served as special agent in charge of number office when he was in San Francisco in the 30s or 40s. He was a bishop in the San Francisco area. When he retired, he became the first director of public safety for the state of Utah. And he's been dead now for 20 years now. But he was part of this team. In fact, he was shot. The bullet went through his head, bounced off his head. So he had a scar up there. And he has a picture of his hat with a hole in it.
Wow.
But he's great. He was a great diarist, though. You go on the internet, look under Jay Newman FBI, pages and pages. This guy wrote big stuff talking about his career and everything. And it's classic, you know, historically, but you have somebody who's writing all this stuff about it. So there was another Mormon agent involved with these team of agents. The second Mormon agent killed in line of duty was 1968 in San Antonio. A young man from Paris, Idaho, named Douglas Price. Went to Utah State, served a mission, got in with the FBI, and this is his first field office. They were down searching for a wanted fugitive. He was sent back to a car to pick up more ammunition and weapons. Well, he got confronted by the guy they looked for, who shot and killed him. And this wanted fugitive then turned the gun on himself. Douglas Price is buried up in Paris, Idaho, the Mormon community up there. What was interesting is that his body was escorted back to Paris from San Antonio by another Mormon agent named Robert Porter. What's significant about that is I knew Bob Porter in the San Francisco office. He had been a bishop down in San Ramon. And after I left, he was transferred down to the San Diego office and was, 1979, was in the resident agency of El Central, which is east of San Diego, where he and the other agent that was in the office were to meet with a gentleman who had some complaints about the group. This guy walked in, opened fire on these two agents, and he killed them, but they also killed him. Well, Robert Porter was one of those agents killed there in El Central. Hmm. And it's so interesting that he was the one involved taking Price's body back. And a great man. I really appreciated him. He was a hard worker. I got to know his son, a guy named Ken Porter. Ken followed his father's footsteps, became an FBI agent, served 30 years, retired about 5 years ago. He was assistant special agent in charge here in the Salt Lake office. He and I did a session at Sunstone in 2011 on Mormons and the FBI, so where all this idea came from. He is now the director of church security for North America.
Oh, wow. You know,
so they moved him up. Four other Mormon agents have died while on duty, but due to accidents. We had an agent Hart in 1960 died in an auto accident in Idaho. We had Mark Kirkland in an airplane crash. Hereford, another airplane crash. Then a Gregory Knapp was the last one about 5-6 years ago. Was in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and he'd been on the beach and saved somebody from drowning, but drowned himself.
Hmm.
So. These are Mormon agents, and we've had a number of agents over the years. Once in a while, you read in the church news about somebody in a state prison saying, FBI agent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's been one Mormon, I forgot his name, I think Christensen, was an assistant director of one of the divisions for a while. So anyway, Sarah, again, going back to your question of, is there a favorite, I don't know. I don't think, some people say there's a large percentage of Mormons in the FBI than any other religion or something like that, or there's a higher percentage compared to the population. I don't know. No one's ever done a study, so I think it's more myth, or people just supposing that it really is.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it attracts people. And again, depending on whether you like or hate the FBI, whether you make a big thing about it.
Well, interesting. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Steve Mayfield. In our next conversation, we'll talk about John D. Lee. He's infamous in the fact that he was the only person convicted in the Mountain Meadows Massacre. Where was he hiding?
Okay, well, Lee's Ferry is a little outpost near the Colorado River. It takes a couple miles to drive in off the major highway. It's an old rock fort. Lee was only there a couple years. North of that is a little farming area called Lonely Dale, which is a very nice little thing, but it's really obscure. Lee wasn't there that long, but it got his name because this was where they would come across the river, the Colorado River, because it winds down through that section of town or of the state.
I hope you enjoyed that short clip from our next interview. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please go to our patreon.com/gospeltangents and subscribe for just $5 a month. If you'd like a transcript of this, please click the yellow subscribe button at gospeltangents.com, and I'll send you this and all future transcripts. Also, if you'd like a paperback like we've got here, those are available at our website at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents. Please get all updates at our Facebook page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. You can also get transcripts individually at our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. Finally, make sure that you subscribe on our Apple Podcast page. Just do a quick search for Gospel Tangents there and give us a 5-star review while you're at it. Thanks again for listening. Your support helps create more Mormon history classes and podcasts such as this, and so I really appreciate you listening. Please share with your friends. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our great videos. Thanks again.